Incredible story tonight. Jim Sparks, author of The Keepers, an alien message for the human race. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take your phone calls and your own stories right here on Coast to Coast Day Out. Okay, welcome back. Jim Sparks with us. We're going to get your calls going in just a moment as well here. Jim, why is it done in a cloak of secrecy, all of this? Why isn't it just above board and out?
Well, you know, a part of the message here is the fact that 50 to 60 years ago, when we had developed nuclear weapons and, you know, bombs were going off, I think I pretty much explained why there were so many crashes, because so many of them were coming at the same time. When we had done that they were smashing into each other. I mean, they were crowded skies in a sense, and down crafts. But I've been advised that, according to them, and I take it to be drop-dead truth, that they did the proper thing those years ago, that they came to power heads. They came to people who were in control.
They tried, didn't they?
They did. They did, and actually communicated and exchanged sciences for us surrendering nuclear, and they focused on biological weapons, nuclear and biological weapons. We claimed, as I was advised, that the hierarchy, you know, claimed, and those in the know that they were involved with, that we weren't ready for anything like this. That we promised, and agreements were made, that we would do this thing in segments over time. And, you know, they received scientists in return.
Well, it seems like they've lived up to that part of it, huh?
Well, they did. And then the terrible part here is the fact that, as they went on to say, that they were well aware that humans, people have been maimed, discredited, murdered, and I hate to use that term, on our end to keep this a secret, and that their hands had nothing to do with any of this. And they also said that they advised that we broke every single, each and every one, and every single agreement that ever came down. And that's where it lies at this time. And it was a fascinating experience getting all this information. It was a sobering experience. And they came up with a solution. And I firmly adhere to the solution because it's a sensible solution, which I'm just going to term it shortly.
Well, we have no choice. We got to do it.
It's called amnesty. Those are their exact words, quote, unquote.
And explain how that fits into that.
An avenue needs to be created because, all right, this is basically these people who have this knowledge. There's a growing majority that'd like to see it come out and reveal the truth. But the primary reason for it, and it's going to be so simple and so just medieval in a sense, is the fact they're afraid of they're afraid for their own butts. Meaning that there has been crimes committed against humanity. They don't want to be charged. They don't want to be convicted. They don't want to go to prison. They don't want to even worse than prison. And they're just, frankly, I'm advised, afraid. And then there's some other issues, which defense, there's some insecurities about defense that came out of this, that defends our, you know, the free world is tied into some of this stuff. But they're afraid to come out. So amnesty, this is advice from non-human intelligent beings saying, if you create an amnesty or an amnesty bill, where they can come forward and not be convicted and not be charged, not for so much for spiritual reasons, but for practical reasons. They can come forward with this stuff, and then these are the things that would help us humans to evolve and to enjoy the world that they have, that they intended it to be. And, you know, it's a thing for the people. It's an avenue for them to do it. And then when you look at everything and you look how everything goes, and it just seems to fall into place.
All right, let's take some calls here, Jim. We'll go to Bob in Buell, Idaho, to get things started. Welcome to the program. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thank you, guys, for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'd like to ask Jim if he thinks that with him coming out and chronicling the abductions that he's been through, if he thought that it might help others that could be abducted or have been to be a little more at ease and not be so afraid like Jim was at the beginning. And if they read his book, I think they'll find that to be quite rewarding also. And I appreciate you guys taking my call, and I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay, you're welcome. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, Bob, I mean, that's a very good statement. Actually, fear is the main thing getting in our way. Understanding them in fear is what gets in the way of learning who they are. But what really got me through a lot of it before it evolved to where the interaction is really good now was the fact that I told myself regularly that I wasn't going to die. They're not going to kill me, and they're not going to hurt me. And then once I came over, overcame rage, and once I overcame fear, then I was more open. And, of course, it evolved to where they opened up, too, at the same time. So, yeah, definitely. I firmly believe from everything I've seen from mass abductions where they've got crafts that have thousands of us. They're abducted all at the same time. Primarily, I can go step by step on as to how they go, but that would take up a lot of time. I don't know if we should do that now, but where they impart these in their minds, a time will come when they'll remember some of the things that they picked up to bring this all together for us to evolve into this thing that'll work. And that time will come. And it's a free choice. No one's forced into it. No one's controlled into it. And you'll have a time when you know, like, wow, I understand what happened to me now, and I understand what I can do, because they've got the capability of deciphering or deciphering, just to put it in simple terms, who each and every one of them is that get pulled, and impart something positive that cooperates together. And it can be kind of a chain reaction. So, yeah, that's the thing.
Okay, back to more calls. Let's go to Tim, Racine, Wisconsin. Hey, Tim, always a pleasure. Go ahead.
Hey, George, and how are you doing, Jim?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
That's really good to hear. I just got a few quick questions for you, I guess. Have you ever been taken to another planet, I guess? And is there like a planet where there's humans, I guess? And then also, have you ever been abducted in front of somebody, I guess? That'd be my question to you, I guess. You know, has someone actually seen you be taken, you know?
That's back to the witness question, Jim.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure
I'll
thing.
Take my answer off there.
All
look.
Right, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, these are the things that I wish I could put something in my hand, but they don't let you take anything with you, and that's a fact. And as far as other worlds are concerned, it's always been on board a craft. The only exception to that has been something to the akin of a huge, huge, huge ship. This happened twice. The stays there were brief. They confined me to a few places on board this thing, but I would say this thing was probably, without exaggeration, it's like some huge satellite that was probably, once you're up against it, you can't see the bottom and you can't see the top and you can't see any more to the right and you can't see to any more to the left as you're approaching it. And it's like a city in space. So it's a satellite in space. So is that another world? Yeah. There's work being done there. Is it in deep space? How far out it is? I don't know. But I did. It happened two times, and I got to be there twice, and it was very brief.
Let's go to Ryan in Freeburg, Illinois. Welcome to the show, Ryan. Take it away.
Hi. I'd like to ask you about if you know who Phil Schneider is and what he says about pretty much he marries the New World Order agenda and the alien agenda. He says they're one and the same. He says, you know, there are certain elements on the periodic table that are classified. He says there's a lot of people missing and that they're all going underground. Like, he references Dulce, New Mexico.
The late Phil Schneider, by the way.
Well, yes. When you say go underground, do you mean, what do you mean by underground? You mean conspiracy thing? I don't understand the question. I clear the question.
He asserts what you assert, that there's a hybrid program, genetic experimentation, biological experiments going underground. Do you have anything, I mean, can you say anything to that?
Well, I mean, only from the limited scope that I have. If everything about alien agenda was a 360-degree circle, I'm privy to about 1.5 to 3% of that circle. And I wish I could answer every question that everybody has for me, but I can only answer what I know to be truthfully and what I've experienced. The business with the hybrid program is what I'm well aware of that I had mentioned earlier in the show, and it was specifically for that purpose. I'm still a little bit not clear what you mean by underground in a sense, meaning that they're still doing this and it's for a new world order and if that's the case, and I think that's the gist of the question, then I can only tell you from my experience that and it's the reason I go into detail in so many different places to bring us up to this point, is because it took years to get the depth of their nature. And I'm not sensing that at all. I'm sensing the fact that they're looking to see us evolve for the first time, and they want us to evolve for the first time, but they're doing it in a way that we have to bring ourselves up to a certain level in order to interact with them to make this whole thing gel. And that's what I do know to be so. So I can't really honestly respond and say that it's a new world order or aliens are interacting with different groups in order for this to happen. I kind of sway more towards, you know, it's the humankind that's more apt to be a part of that scene.
What's the future hold for this, Jim? What do you think could happen?
Well, you know, I've seen near future, I've interacted with near future human beings within 500 years. And the question comes up, are these human beings... Well, if near future human beings are coming back in time, and I'm one of the most fortunate people in the world to interact with them, then this must say we succeeded, we evolved. And then on the other side of the coin, it says, well, perhaps we self-destructed and only a handful survived it to start it over again, but some of them made it to future science, in a sense. And I think that obviously they travel time, and obviously what all they ever reveal are the possibilities, but they will not reveal where we will be. They reveal the possibilities, and I think they do it that way so we don't just say, oh, we're going to self-destruct and give up on ourselves. Now, there's enough negativity out there, as we just mentioned earlier. And or at the same time, oh, gee, we evolved, and kind of be lazy about it at the same time. So they're not saying so. But if you ask me, from what I've seen and what I've experienced, and you did ask me, I think that the scales have a strong, strong possibility of tilting towards the state of evolving. But we're very, very close to go the other way at the same time. So we got some challenges.
Yeah, it could go either way.
It could go either way. I'm just hopeful for the other way.
Sedona, Arizona, Blair's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Blair, go ahead.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
The Keys of Enoch, Dr. Hertak's book, he talks about us being wary of dealing with creatures that don't resemble us. I think he calls it the Adam Kadmon. And I'm also noticing that you have a similar story to Whitley Strieber's communion experiences. And also, if we look back into the 1950s, the early contactees like Adamski and Fry, they encountered these so-called beautiful humans, and it came from the local planets, Venus and Saturn. And now all of a sudden, there seems to be a quarantine on their visits, and we're just seeing the bug-eyed versions. What's your comment on that?
Well, I can tell you this, that it'll help respond to this question in part, maybe in a little more than part. The fact is that I've been privy and have experienced, I kind of laugh at it because it's from where I was and where I got to and what I get to share is kind of exciting, but there's definitely human beings that were bred and raised not on coming from here, the materials necessary, which, you know, incubate and make a fetus, and bred and raised in other places, and there's no doubt about it that they come back. And that's a fascinating world in itself in detail.
Why do they bring them back?
So they can see their roots and to see where they come from. And they blend them in. They hide them in plain sight when they bring them in landing parties, and literally in plain sight. And, of course, you got beings who, again, think 10 to 100 times faster. They leave little to nothing to chance, and they can prepare the way where there's a safe return for these people. And these people, for the first time, and they're evolved human beings, and they're quite a bit naive when they're here, and they've got to be watched closely. Because they're not used to some of the things that we are, but they're here to learn about, you know, what their roots are and where they came from. And they're hidden in plain sight, meaning that they take them to Meccas, where there's literally a tourist Mecca, a Las Vegas. I don't know why Las Vegas is such a hot spot other than Area 51, but that's an area where they can blend them in because it's a little bit chaotic, and, you know, nobody's going to notice somebody's wearing, you know, clothes a little strange or a little bit out of style or whatever, because there's people coming from all over the world. That's just one place. There's places that they bring them back. So as far as the benign humans or benign human-like from the 50s that you were referring to, I can't really say if they were a part of that agenda or program at the time, but I can say that they're doing that now.
Jim, do us a favor, get your website out again and the name of your book, and then we'll take a break and come back with final calls.
Okay, it's Jim-Sparks or Jim-Sparks.com, and the name of the book is The Keepers.
All right, you got it. Jim Sparks, our special guest here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. I'll be back in a moment, tell you what's in store on our next Coast to Coast show, plus we'll take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And on our next Coast to Coast program, we've got a split show for you. Peter Lantz joins us for a couple hours, talking about his new work, Deal with the Devil. It's all about how strange things have happened on this planet. And then later on, we're going to be talking with a tremendous astrophysicist about some science. So make sure you're part of that Coast to Coast show. When we come back in a moment with Jim Sparks, we shall take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Jim Sparks with us. Jim, the entities, did they ever give their names, or do they have names?
You know, you remember, as I mentioned earlier, no names specifically. But as I mentioned earlier, you can judge them separately by the energy that's radiated out of them, and it's you can tell one from another in that aspect because you sense it. As I said earlier, it took years not to. It took time to get used to being around it, but you can pick up something like that, and so it separates one from the other. But at face value, they seem all the same. But it just takes time to realize that there's some individual qualities, but it's something that you just can't pick up right away. But that's the best I can say for a name, is that whatever radiates out
And it's also a rank and file. You can sense that one may be of a supervisory nature by what they radiate. And again, is that a name? But it separates an individual.
Okay, let's take the final calls. First time caller, David, Las Vegas, Nevada. Hey, David, go ahead.
Hi. Did we talk about abductions?
Yes, sir.
For about 9 months now, I've been going out in the desert on an Indian reservation, and I've been taking a laser out with binoculars and night vision goggles and all mounted together so I can get a pretty close look at the lights in the sky moving around. So I'd laser them, and they'd laser me back, you know, and I do this because I want to get abducted. So I think I'd be ready for it. So about 2 months ago, I was walking out in...
You still there?
Hello?
Oh, he just disappeared. They beamed him up or something, Jim, huh?
Apparently.
Oh, well, try to get back to us. Looks like he was in the verge of a good story.
Yeah, I was waiting.
Providence, Rhode Island, we go. It's Vince's turn. Go ahead, Vince.
Hey, George. Pleasure to be on the phone with you.
Thank you,
long-time
sir.
Long-time listener. I'm a physics major at Brown University, and with my own UFO experiences, we'll just say I'm a firm believer. Jim, what an amazing story you've told tonight. I had just a brief question out of curiosity and in nature of the wild card line. I'm curious, what ever happened to the black box that you were given as a gift?
The black box remained on board. There's no way you're going to get anything and bring it home. It's impossible. As much as I would have liked to.
They won't let you.
They won't let you. They absolutely will not.
Jim, the government, of course, knows something. What about other countries? What's going on out there?
Well, yeah, going back to that, earlier I was saying interaction on my part has been with, American-based, but I definitely have seen, and now I can only talk about onboard experiences, I've definitely seen what appear to be Central American, South American, Asian, can say that Norwegian looking, perhaps Germanic or German, and pretty much Asian in some cases, and the ones that have spoken to me have spoke, clear English, which, clearly to me from, the U.S.
All right, let's go to some final calls. Andrew in Los Angeles. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling. Well, there you go. Let's go to Donovan in Springfield, Missouri. Hey, Donovan, it's your turn.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I just had a quick, I was listening to the program. I wanted to ask if Mr. Sparks was familiar with two things, and he already answered one, and it kind of sent chills down my spine here. But I grew up in Las Vegas, south side of Las Vegas Boulevard out in the desert. And when I'm 30 years old now, but when I was about 14, basically eighth grade, I used to wake up probably having about four or five times, but to an alarming loud sound. Paralyzed, I could see, but couldn't move, basically screaming to the top of my lungs, but there's no sound coming out, and it'd go on for about a minute, and then I was back asleep, and I'd wake up, and that was basically the only thing I remember. Couldn't see anything or anything like that. So when you spoke about that, that's kind of chilling. It happened about four or five times in Vegas, and then family picked up and moved to Missouri, and it happened once here in Missouri. There's one thing that I wanted to also ask. I was in the military and ended up shattering my finger, and basically had an x-ray taken of my hand, my right hand, and they basically were very astounded to find that there's a round, circular, you know, like almost like a BB size object directly center of my hand, you know, of my palm, basically looking at it both ways. Have you ever heard of anything like that, or?
Well, you know, regarding implants, you know, I answered the best I can on that. But regarding implants, you know, people have asked me, you know, why don't you get yourself checked out to see if there's an implant, or do you think you have an implant, or what do you know about implants? And early on, I would have, you know, I would have ran, not walked, to find out. But in these latter years, I don't even want to know if there's an implant, because I don't want anything to stop from what's happening. So, are you still on the line with me, by the way?
No, he's not.
Okay. I didn't want to stop. I don't want anything to stop that's been going on. So, as far as implants are concerned, I can't say. Regarding what you just said, just in short, you know, there's two ways that, in my experience, that people go, as I mentioned earlier. When a craft, one's kind of benign and one's very rough. When a craft is on the ground and they escort you, it's easy on your system. But when you're pulled the hard way, and the hard way I describe is happening only when the craft is in flight. And however they pull you, all the sound and all the noise and everything go with it. But I was what I was wondering to ask him was the point was, is this a sound? I wonder, George, if he's hearing in his head, or is this a sound that's because it doesn't mean there's anything wrong if you're just hearing it in your mind. Or is this a sound that he's hearing audibly, you know? And I just would like to know that, but anyway, he's not on there. So in my case, I would say it's definitely the sights and the sounds and some of the things I picked up on as being possibly that. And also, it's usually within instead of audible from without.
Are you no longer scared over all this, are you?
No. No, I'm not. Even when you're pulled and it's the hard way, which my interactions have been less of that and more in their face, it's still gut-wrenching. And you really believed in the early years that you were going to die, that it's like your soul's being pulled out of your body. I just don't know any better way to describe it. But once you accept the fact that you're not, you're okay. So you become less scared. And again, George, I came back safe and sound every time. Every time I came back, so the trauma.
Does everybody come back safe and sound?
I'm not sure. I can't speak physically. I don't think there has been. Nobody's presented themselves to me over all these years and conferences and lectures and talks and such that they harmed my body, and here's living proof of it. I think it's the trauma that hurts people, and I think it's the trauma that some people have because they have some memories. But I think they're mostly in the minority for sure.
Let's go to Margaret in St. Louis. Hello, Margaret. Did you get much rain tonight?
Hi. Oh, yeah. We've had a lot of storms tonight. I'm new to all of this, so this might be a silly question, but I was wondering if extraterrestrials, if they believe in God.
Did that ever come up, Jim? Extraterrestrials and their believer in a creator?
Well, there's... okay.
I would think they would.
Well, there is a spiritual side to them, and it's a spiritual side, in a sense, is the fact that they have a deep concern and investment and involvement in the environment in general. And I suspect that they take hold throughout the entire cosmos. They're deeply vested in it. And, you know, from everything I've gathered over the years, that, you know, they've put stuff here. And they like the stuff that they have here, and they want to see the stuff that they have here still be here. So, in a sense, that would be the spiritual side that I think.
Memphis, Tennessee caller, it's Curtis's turn on Coast to Coast. Curtis, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, hi. Appreciate you taking my call, and I really enjoy the show.
Sure, thank you.
Jim, I had a question. When you were in, in the ship, did you have any opportunity to go in any of the navigation areas?
Unfortunately not.
Well, I did.
Aha. Tell us more.
Yeah.
When I was 14, I was abducted with my father, and I was not supposed to be there, from what I understood. And they didn't know what to do with me. And I was befriended by one of the Greys, and they just took me away from what was going on with the others. And your thing about time, too, kind of intrigued me, too, because I got in kind of a discussion with one of them about time, and they had no concept when I said, well, how long have I been gone? How long are y'all going to keep me? And he just kind of turned around and says, everything is now. And he took me over to this thing, and I viewed in it, and you could see time going, anything in there. You could see, pick a time, and you could see it, see the Romans. It was amazing. I saw three-dimensional navigation system with the planets. And a lot of that, I said, you know, this would be nice to know. But, again, it's like you said, it's like nothing you could take with you. I don't remember any of it, but. But what they told me was that they like to get me back 30 minutes, in a 30-minute window after they took me, somewhere in that hour, I guess a magic hour, getting me back so I don't lose any time. But basically, they told me I was gone 75 years.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, but when you start talking about the time, it just clicked on me. But that was my only encounter, but I was never really afraid of them. I went through the procedures of the taking the sperm and everything.
Well, I think it's interesting. Yeah, no, not to, I didn't want just briefly. I think it's interesting that you brought up that response that there's no time. What did you get out of that?
They were eternal. They time meant nothing to them. That they could be anywhere they want to be in a matter of just like thought.
I think you found that out to be the same, Jim, didn't you? Time doesn't mean much.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. It
means a lot to us.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we only have a few minutes left.
Yeah. But I'm 58 now and still am puzzled by that, but intrigued like you. And what they told me, I asked them, they said, well, they'll be back. And I said, well, how would you find me? He says, we know where you all are at.
Well, that's a good point. How many people is this happening to? Millions?
You're asking? Yeah. Well over millions. Well over millions.
It must be a huge agenda.
It is.
See, David Jacobs doesn't think they're very friendly at all. He thinks there's something else afoot here.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I mean, David Jacobs and at the time, you know, the sad loss of Bud Hopkins.
Yeah.
He's clinical. And I enjoy his work, and I think his work is well, is good. It is, and he puts everything in a sense that is comprehensible. Bud and I enjoyed each other's company, but we didn't agree completely on whether what they were up to, whether it's benevolent or not, or whether it's for us. But I have a healthy respect for David's work, and I enjoyed the work that he's written. Coming from some of the things that happen in a clinical sense, are probably not enjoyable, like some of the things that happened to me. But then I'm one of the fortunate ones that had the experience to go with several years of this, to see a bigger picture. And basically, it's their nature. And it just makes it very difficult in the beginning to understand what they're about. And then you can see something a bit more productive that way.
We're at Pete in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Pete.
Thank you, George. Jim, everything you described tonight about the abduction experience is exactly what I went through. And I needed to hear it as clearly as you stated it. I'm fully convinced now. It took some time, but every memory, you said it, and I believe it. Now, the thing is, what I want to ask you, during my experience, when it was a telepathic experience for the previous caller about God, they were actually anti-God. When I said, I am with God, something that you do when you're scared, you don't know what's going on, they got very angry. And they kind of said to me, there is no God. There's no such thing as a God. I believe in God fully do to this day. But can you annoy these aliens is what I mean. They have never come back. I feel like they rejected me. I touched both their hands when they had their hands on my body. I touched them. I felt their hands. Like it was kind of similar to ours, but a rubbery feeling without fingers. I just want to know, can you turn the aliens off to you?
30 seconds, Jim.
Well, I mean, you know, with me, I definitely take a stand where I have to throw an anchor. And in order to get the information, I'm very careful about it. I know they're very sensitive and they're very touchy about being asked questions, because basically that's what the humans want. They want answers, and I don't blame us for wanting answers, but they're always bombarded with answers, questions all the time. So what I do is I throw anchor, and I let them tell me. I learn from what they want me to know, and I keep my mouth shut.
And you learned a lot, Jim. You did. Hey, we're out of time, Jim. I want to thank you for being on the program.
And I'm really happy to be here this evening, and then thank you for having me on the show. Absolutely.
Jim Sparks, website jim-sparks.com. For Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.